Okay, let's go. Does anyone want to sit like here?
Yeah.
I think people maybe forgot there was a shit there, I don't know why. Fundamental prayer this actually. Let's see. Okay, prayer test about 15. In the Tanya it would be 40. Sorry?
Yeah,
page 40. Okay, so in the light of what the Alter Rebbe has been explaining till now, he is going to begin this perek by answering a question in Tanakh, in Malachi actually, which the Gemara comments on, and it's kind of strange pasuk in a way. And the Alter Rebbe explains the meaning of the pasuk. So, in light of what we explained till now, it will give us an understanding of this pasuk. But the important thing to understand is that Alter Rebbe in Tanya is not just a book of Dvar Torah. You know, it's like a good Dvar Torah serve a Friday night meal or something. Which every Dvar Torah is supposed to be a lesson, but Tanya particularly is a manual. It's a manual for Avodas Hashem, right? So he answers the question, and it's a very nice pshat. But you'll see as the lines continue on, that's really trying to bring out a very important point in our point. Okay. So I'll just explain to you the pasuk outside. So there's a pasuk that says, in Malachi chapter 3, it says, V'shaftem u'ra'isem. I'm not sure the context there exactly, but V'shaftem only means you'll return and you'll see. Bein tzadik l'rasha, you'll be able to distinguish between a tzadik and a rasha. Bein oved elokim la'shaloy avod, between one who serves God and one who doesn't serve God. What's the question in the pasuk?
Who's he talking to?
Well, okay. I mean, the pasuk starts off by distinguishing between a tzaddik and a rasha, right?
Yeah.
So then he says, and then between a servant of God and a non-servant of God. So then what's the double expression for? I mean, obviously we understand that a tzaddik is one who serves God. A rasha is one who doesn't serve God, or lacking in the service of God, right? So presumably the simple pshat of the pasuk is that says you'll be able to tell the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, which is the difference between a servant of God and not a servant of God. Which seems strange. Okay, so he says like this. Ubezeh yuvan, but this will understand. Mashakosa, what it's written, v'shaftem ereisem, you'll return and you'll see. Bein tzaddik l'rasha, the thing which is between a tzaddik and a rasha. Bein oivad l'akim, mishaloi avodai, on the servant of God and one doesn't serve him. Shehefresh bein oved elokim letzadik. Oh, so obviously the oved elokim, the servant of God, is different to a tzaddik. And what he's going to say, what he's explaining, obviously, is that the servant of God that he talks about in the pasuk is a benoni. But then the question is, what's the non-servant of God? We'll see that it's a different type of benoni, which we'll see in a second. But he says a very fascinating thing. He says, see, when it talks about the servant of God, it doesn't say Eved Hashem. It says Oyved Hashem, one who is serving God. And he uses the term Oyved, like Avodah. Now in Chassidus, Avodah means when you change something, when you have to break something in. You know, there's a fascinating expression which is always brought in Chassidus when it talks about this idea of Avodah. Right? That it compares it to what the Gemara calls a tanner. Someone who's doing tannery calls someone who's me'abed oiros or ibud oiros. Same word, ibud, avoider. Well, how do you tan something? You take a piece of skin then from the animal that is very rough. What's that? You gotta bend it, you gotta soften it, you gotta work with it. And sorry, there's just something strange on this thing. Rashi, oh, whatever, doesn't matter.
14 in our book.
Okay. So tenoring leather means you soften the leather, you break it in, like you gotta put stuff there, you gotta work hard to do it, you're right. That's term of it. Stuff like this, see like this. Shahefresh bein oved elakim letzadik. Difference between someone who's called an oved elakim, serving God, in the present tense, and a tzaddik is this. Oved, the word oved is present tense. He is working, and he's doing avodah, right? Which means in the middle of the avodah, he's doing it still. Meaning, what's the avodah that he's in the middle of? It's the milchama with the yetzahara. It's the war with the yetzahara, right? These gabaralov to overpower the Yetzar or the Garsha and to drive it out by Ir Ketana from the small city, the person, Shalai Slabish Baivra Guf, that the Yetzar should be able to come into the limbs of the body. Shulbe Emes Avoida, it's a real Avoida. The Omel Godel and an effort, Lihi Locham Baitomit, to really fight it the whole time, the Hainu HaBeinani. And that's why it's a Beinani, right? Now, in the Farshim of Tanya explained like this, that there's a bit of an emphasis here. It's not just that he works hard, right? Because we'll see a tzaddik also works hard. Okay, let's just see one more line, and I'll explain what I'm going to say. Avala tzaddik, what's a tzaddik called? A tzaddik's not called an oyved alokim. He's called eved Hashem. He's a servant of God. He serves God. Eved Hashem means it's not doing the avodah. He is already an eved Hashem. He's accomplished the avodah already, and what does he do now? He still works out. But he works out not to... That's the difference. In other words, b'shem ha'tor, like it's a descriptive term.
It's an adjective, yeah.
Yeah.
The other one's a verb.
Exactly. Shem chochem, like you say, a person's a chochem, he's a wise person, which means a wise person. Oy melech, he's a king. Means shekvar nasecho, he's not in the middle of becoming a king, he's already a king, or he's already a wise person. Oy melech, right? Same thing with the tzaddik, too. He already worked. In other words, v'gomar legamri, he already finished the avodas hamilchama, the service of the war. Imarah was a bad actor. Yisham ve'elach boy with the buchalav kibbutz. Until it's gone already, it's like he's like we said with David HaMelech, that he has a hollow space inside because the Yetzer Hara is gone. Right. Now that doesn't mean So normally we say avodah would mean effort, but it doesn't mean the tzaddik doesn't put in effort. The tzaddik could put in superhuman effort. He worked very hard. But he doesn't have to transfer, he doesn't have to change anything. That's the difference. There's no resistance. He's not fighting or something. It's like a piece of leather. Yes, there is hard, he has to make it soft. That's a Beinoni. That's a Beinoni who is in the middle of that Aveda. And for most Beinonim, or even aspiring Beinonim, that's lifelong service. That's a lifelong mission. Right? The tzaddik, of course, works very, very hard. Tzaddik's not lounging about on the beach, but right, on the contrary. He works harder than the Beinoni sometimes, or he works harder than the average person. He's serving Hashem constantly. But it's not avoida. It's not that he has to fight with something. Because that force that fights it, that force that resists it, has gone away.
Isn't it comes more natural to him?
It's become like a natural thing, exactly.
It becomes him.
Becomes him, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like an example, let's say a child that is very, very close to his parents, right? And the parents need to move house, so the parents need something and they can't do it themselves, right? So he might put in a huge effort and work very hard for 6 weeks to move them or to do something for them, right? But it's not a vayda. It's not to get to fight. That's what he wants to do. He loves his parents. Is he working very hard? Yes. Is he tired? Yes. But that's not a vayda. What it means when you're fighting with a resisting force, and that's the Beinoni.
Always mean
that word in Hebrew. Well, in Chassidus, it always means that word. Yeah, when it's used, talked about serving Hashem, it always means. I saw a story recently where Aaron Fonda was a very big Chassid. He saw a Bocher. He should have been a Babich. I don't know. He saw him. He was that he was eating, but he was eating for indulgence. He wasn't eating for healthy, like just to keep himself healthy or strong to serve Hashem. He was eating extra, and especially in those times, and they were applying Tanya literally. I'm higher madrega than we do. So he said to him, what's the... So the guy told him, the bracha says, oh, I'm not an oivid. I'm not an oivid. You know, an oivid was like a description. Bracha, he said, daven long, he used to work hard and change those called. He said, I'm not an oivid. So he said, you don't get to choose if you're an oivid or not. That's what you created, to be an oivid. Everyone has to be an oivid. Everyone has to try and put in effort. Okay. Now he says, introduces a very interesting concept, which we'll see why this is, it explains the second part of the pasuk, but also explains a very fundamental concept. Says with a beinoni. Now, so therefore, in other words, going back to this pasuk, the pasuk said you'll see the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, and then it starts talking about an oived elokim. That's not describing the tzaddik, that's describing a beinoni. The question is, what's the next phrase? Because it says you'll see the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, and between an oived elokim and someone who's not an oived elokim. So what does that mean? He says there are two types of beinonis. This is a very interesting concept. He says like this. In the beinoni, there's also two levels. There's an oived elokim, mashal lo yavodoy. You can have a beinoni that's not considered an oived Hashem. Nevertheless, he's not a rasha. This is an interesting kind of person. Rare, but it's an interesting kind of person. Why? You can have a beinoni, but his entire life he never did any averis. He actually fulfilled all the mitzvahs that it's possible to do. The Talmud Torah can make a kulam, including Talmud Torah. The pasuk pumim megirsa, he never actually stopped learning. He never wastes time. He's always learning whenever he can. Which means he's really clean, right? The problem is, Elisha'enu oisa shum mulchama mayetzer. He actually is not fighting a war. Why not? Let the Natsayach, al the Oir Hashem. He's not fighting a war to be victorious on through the light of Hashem, Amei Nef Shalakis, right? By normal Beinu, we say there's an amazing fight. And we said a few chapters ago, it needs the light of Hashem to come help the Nefesh HaLakis overpower the Nefesh HaBamis, right? We said there were two judges, the Nefesh HaLakis and the Nefesh HaBamis, and then Hashem's the third one who comes and pushes on the Nefesh HaLakis. In other words, which comes through the person reflecting and arousing love of Hashem and through davening and all that kind of stuff, right? He says, this person's not doing that. What's he not doing? He's not victorious because of the light of Hashem that's shining on the Nefesh HaKish, Moyach in the Shubha Moyach HaShalit Alalev, in the brain that is ruling the heart, as we said before. Why is that not happening? Because this guy doesn't have a strong Yetzirah, naturally. Why? And he can explain why. He doesn't have a Yetzirah that's really fighting him so much, right? I don't know where that means. There's a few people maybe like this, but most people sound like this, but... Right? He doesn't have a Yetzirah fighting him to take him away from the Rasa, from his Torah, Avedosa, and his service of Hashem. I mean, sorry, Ilchom Mekal doesn't really have to fight with it at all. Why? For example, he says, Kagoin, for example, Shu Masmin Bili Mudai Betiva, Betiva, Betel Dosa. You have certain people that are born Masmidim. You know what a Masmid is? A person who always learns, right? There's certain people that are born intellectual people. They just love to learn. Okay, so he's learning Torah at least, but. Right? In other words, they're not just, it doesn't interest them. And he said, actually, it's a top type of personality. Alidei tagboiris hamora shchoira. He says, it's through the strengthening of the black bile. You know, we have this concept that there's four biles in the body, which have different colors. There's black, yellow, red, something white, I think. Right? Normally, depression is associated with the Rambam says, when there's imbalance and there's too much of mora shchoira, too much of the black stuff, the black juice, or the black bile, whatever you call it. In the body, then that brings like a more of a depressive sort of person, right? So he says over here, you can have a person as Morish Chayra. That's why in modern Yiddish, if a person is sad or down, you call him a Morish Chayra. That's where it comes from, right? But you can have a person not depressed. It's just he's not an excitable person. He's just a cold person who just loves to be in the books. Yeah, that's fine, right? And therefore he says, V'chein ein loy milchama v'tayvas nashim, is a person that's not tempted by immorality, by, you know, with women, he says, not like on the wives, but just a cold person. He's just not interested. Cold person. The worldly pleasures doesn't tempt him much, right? He's lacking that sense of pleasure from this world. He just loves to sit and learn, and he's fine. He's okay the way he is. Right? Now, that doesn't mean to say a person doesn't have Yetzirah. I mean, we have people who don't serve Hashem of the same personality, right? So he says, so what does that mean? He says like this. Therefore, v'lochein, this person who makes the choice that he's going to serve Hashem with that kind of personality, ain't sorichli his boinein kol kach. He doesn't have to do so much reflection and davening. Begidula savaya lo choylid, maybe nosoi, to give birth through his chochma, through his bina, ruach das, and the spirit of real connection, v'yiras Hashem, and the fear of Hashem, v'moichein, his mind, v'shomer, sh'lalav, v'mitzloisaseh, to be really pumped up that he's not going to transgress a negative commandment, or the avas Hashem, or to build this flaming love of Hashem, as we said before, beliboy in his heart, the dofka boy, to cleave to Hashem, the kima mitzvahs, to do mitzvahs, talmud Torah, keneged kula. So what does he do? How does he make it? Hello. Dailoi be'avam suteres asher b'leiv kolos Yisro. For him it's enough, the regular innate love that every yid has. Yeah, that innate love, it's called the hidden love of the neshama, which he will talk about before. Up to now, we just mentioned, we mentioned that a benyani needs to actually have revealed love. He has to have what's called his bonimus. He has to really reflect. And that was for a normal benyani to win the war. That's why I explained this when we learned it, that davening is such an important part of Tanya, because for a real benyani to win the war, it takes a lot of thinking, right? It takes a lot of thinking to understand that there's nothing that's really of value other than Hashem. Right, to do that, that takes a lot of davening, it takes daily davening, it takes hisbonus reflection, chacham bin adas, to think about the greatness of Hashem, right? Which is done through like learning things like Tanya and Chassidus and things like that, where you understand the lowliness of the world and the greatness of God, right? Where you start to realize that there's nothing much of value in anything other than connecting to Hashem, right? And that takes a lot of effort, and that's why the real benyani also comes with the real davening. It comes with the real hisbonimus and learning and understanding and internalizing. This guy, the one that's not oved Hashem, and also we explained before that what happens is he does it through learning before davening, contemplating before davening, and then davening, where in davening he almost becomes a semi-tzaddik, right? He's like so fired up, even though he's not really fired up because Nefesh HaBamis is still there, and it comes back after davening, but at least the firing up was enough then to fight the war. During the day to like fight the war, right? Okay. This one doesn't need that so much. He obviously needs to make a choice. Every person needs to make a choice. Everyone is born with the Yasura, unless you're a tzaddik. The tzaddik comes later, or you're born a tzaddik. But we're not talking about a tzaddik. We're talking about someone's a regular guy. It's just he's a bit cold and it's not such a hard choice to him. He hasn't got such a hard war. So all he needs to do is to be aware of his innate love to Hashem and the basic idea of that we connect to Hashem and that innate love that every neshama has, which he talks about later, by the way. Later when he talks about the Benyanim who don't have the power to daven like a real Benyanim, what are they going to do about it? They don't have that power to really give birth to a real love of Hashem within the heart. So he explains different strategies later on about, and one of them is tapping into the hidden love, and he gives us a way how to do that. But this guy, it's enough. This Avam Aster is enough. So he's not really called an Oyvei Delokim. He's doing everything right. He's basically a Benyanim. He's made the choice, and that's his choice in life because he wants to serve Hashem rather than do anything else. But he's not really an Oyvei Hashem because he's not fighting a battle. And fighting the battle is a really important thing. Okay, we'll see. Yeah? Again, Dai Loi Be'Ava Musateres, that's enough for him, the hidden love. Asher Belev, Kolos Yisrael, which is in the heart of all the Yidden. Shenikru, we are called Oyavei Shmoi. The Pasuk refers to the Jewish people as Oyavei Shmoi, the ones who love his name, meaning we are natural lovers of Hashem. Not always so obvious, but we are natural lovers, right? Connected to Purim, that was the idea of Esther. Esther represents the Yid, that's the love is hidden, but it's there. Right? And Purim comes out and so on. Okay. V'lochein, therefore, eino nikra oyved klal. Therefore, he's not called an oyved. Why? Ki avazu musateres, this hidden love, eino pulase, is actually not a result of his own effort anyway. V'avidose klal. And the Yerusha seinu, it's an inheritance. It's an inheritance that we have from our forefathers. We got it from Avram Avinu. We'll explain a little bit later in chapter 18. Avram Avinu bequeathed us with this hidden love through his neshama. And every yid has this, that's why every yid believes, every yid loves Hashem, innately, hiddenly at least, right? So when you tap into it, if you're that kind of personality, you don't need to really fight this raging war. Obviously you did something, you're tapping into the hidden love, but that's not called an Oyved Hashem because Oyved Hashem is... We have that love anyway. It just needs a matter of tapping into it. Okay, so he did. But it's not really called an Oyved Hashem like the real Benyani who's fighting that raging war. Yeah? Okay, so that explains the pasuk. So therefore, let's go back to the pasuk. Ushaftem reisim, you'll see the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha. And then we go to a beyani, which can be divided into two parts, bein oved Hashem, the one who loves Hashem, and the one who doesn't love Hashem. The one who serves Hashem and the one who doesn't serve Hashem. Because serving Hashem, to be an oved Hashem, means you're fighting a war, and that second beyani is not really fighting a war, even though it's a beyani. It's not doing anything wrong. Now I see something amazing, which is so relevant to us. It's like this famous thing I mentioned before, but let's see. Chayin. The same principle, like, so what relevance does it have to all of us? We are, most of us are not depressed people, hopefully, in that sense. And we do fight away in war, we have a big war to fight. This is like this. But we can still apply the relevance and the difference between an Oved Hashem and an Oved Hashem. Says, even if you have a person that's actually not a natural, diligent person, he's not natural learning Hashem, learning Torah every minute. Right? So you have to fight for it. Rak, shehirgil atzmoy lilmoid, he accustomed himself to learn with great diligence. And what happened was, after a while, v'nasea hergaloi tevasheni. After a while, it became natural. There are people, you can acquire a second nature. Right? There are people who had to fight to be able to have a gishmak and enjoyment of learning. Then eventually they do it and they learn every day, day and night, till it becomes natural. Dailoi, the Avmasteris, is now at the point where you can learn, he's using learning as an example, where you can learn all day or learn every spare minute, and it's enough just to use the hidden love. So in other words, you can get a Beinoni who's a real Oved Hashem, and it becomes Loi Avodai. He becomes a non-Oved Hashem, because he got used to it. Elohim came, roitze lilmoid yoiser mergilusa, unless he wants to learn more than he's used to. In other words, he's introducing a very, very important thing. Even if you have to fight a war to get to a certain level of serving Hashem, and then you become used to it, now you've got to take the next step and go into an area where it is a war. Because you have to keep growing and keep fighting the war. Because Nefesh HaBamis is still there, by obeying it. Once had a story with, I've told you about this chassid who the Friedrich Rebbe said he was a Beinoni of Tanya. Reb Nissen Nemlov. Nissen Nemlov was the Mashpia in France. He was davening hours every day. He was a Beinoni of Tanya. The real Beinoni. Real deal. And he davened and he worked and he. One of his big things was Kabbalah's oil. Like, you gotta just do what needs to be done. You gotta force yourself. You gotta. He used to talk about that like the minimum. So one of his things is he learned the whole of Torah, but his main focus was learning Chassidus, right? So he knew the whole Tanya by heart, and it was a very, very big and complex series of Ma'amorim that the Rebbe Rashab said, called a famous thing called Samach Vav, which is 61 heavy essays, right? Like very, very, that's one of the deepest books of Chassidus. And he learned all 61 by heart, like everything, right? So one time he was arraying with Bachar, he was pushing him, you have to push yourself, you have to learn Torah Bal Peh, you have to learn Mahat, you have to push him to work. So one Bachar decided to be a Chacham, he started to start up with him and he said, listen, you can't tell us that, you love this stuff. You love to learn Tanya Bahat, you love to learn Tzom. He was like, I don't know if the Bachar was doing this consciously, but he was challenging him with this, right? He's saying, you know what, why don't you take something hard for you, like take a Masecht of Gemara, which, he learned Gemara, but that wasn't his focus, right? And try to learn that Bal Peh. Try to learn a Psachim, try to learn Masechta Psachim by heart, like 100 pages, and learn that by heart. Nissen said, you're right. He took himself off and he did the whole thing Bal Peh, which was taka very hard for him, right? I don't believe that he was a loy avodah, I think he kept working on it, but he took that thing on board, interesting. Anyway, but. So now he brings the famous idea. He says, this concept we can understand. But the Gemara makes a comment. But the Gemara says, what's taka the difference between an Oyved Elohim and someone who's not an Oyved Elohim? Says the Gemara, famous Gemara. What's an Oyved Elohim? Excuse me, Hanimisha Shoina Pirka Meya Bami Vechat. So a person that learns, he reviews his learning 101 times. The Lo Yavadeh, I've mentioned this many times. The Lo Yavadeh, and the person doesn't serve Hashem, Hani Misha Shoyin Napirko Mea Pa'amim Bilabah. But he only learns 100 times, right? What's the Pshat? The Pshat is, Hainu, because Mishum Shubim Meyim in those days, Haver Gilus, everything was learned by heart, because there was no Svarim, it was real Torah Shrapeh. So the custom was, the norm was, Lishana is called Perek Mea Pa'amim, to learn every chapter that you learned 100 times. Right? And therefore, that's called a non-serving Hashem. That one more time that you learn, that's called a service Hashem. That's hard. Breaking your habits. Okay, the Issa also, like it says over there, and it brings a moshul in the Gemara. Gemara moshul, what's Hashem moshul? So it brings a moshul, Meshuk Shul Chamorim. It's like a, I think it was a marketplace of donkeys that they used to hire, rent out a donkey. Like you rent a car, right? But the like you rented a donkey, but sheniskarim le eser parsa, the rent out the donkey that was able to go 10 parsa, let's say 10 miles, whatever parsa is, that's a proper measurement. Bezuzva, and they charge one zuz for that, right? So if you clocked in, you say, listen, I want to rent your donkey, I want to go for up to 10 parsa, one zuz. Ula achad oser parsa, but if you want to rent the donkey to go 11 parsa, tre zuz, it was two zuz, double the price for one extra parsa. Why? Because the donkeys were trained to go 10 parsa. He said, yeah, you want to take my donkey for 11 parsa? It means you're going to challenge it. It's wear and tear. You're going to challenge my donkey then. So then it's 11 parsa. It's two zuz, double. Right? Therefore, v'lochen zoysa pa'ma me'ev acha, same thing with learning. That 101st time, ha'yiseira ara legilus, which is more than your habit. Shehurugul min ha'urav, that you trained yourself when you were young, Shkula keneged kulan. It is equal to all the 100 times. That one extra time is equal to all the 100 times. V'oy lagabein is higher than them even. V'yeser seis v'yeser oz. Kedei liyois nikra oyver delakim. To become an oyver delakim. That's what it's about. Now why is that? It says, b'pnei, because when you have to go into a territory where you have to break your habits, in order to change your habit, in order to change your nature, that you need to work on. And that you have to all of a sudden go back and you have to go back and awaken the love of Hashem. You have to work hard to bring out why is it worth doing that? Why do I need to do that? You have to motivate yourself all over again. In order to think about the greatness of Hashem, in your brain, lishlar ateva, to really overpower that, and to lead and to take control of your nature, shochalas smoli, in your left ventricle, hamolei dam, the nefesh abamis, which is full of blood, that comes from the nefesh abamis, shem haklipa, shemeno ateva, which it comes from the klipa, and that's where the nature comes from. Nature comes from nefesh abamis, and the zuhi tam voida tam lebeini, and that's the complete avoid of Abayini. Right? So this is the concept of overcoming nature. That's called the Oyvadalakim. Because there you have to tap into your Neshama properly, you have to bring out the Avas Hashem, you have to, right? We see this in so many different ways, right? So first of all, the story of Tzemach Tzedek. It's the highlighting the greatness of the war. So the story of Tzemach Tzedek, someone came to Tzemach Tzedek and said, Tzemach Tzedek, I'm really having a big, big, big problem. I have a problem learning Torah. I don't enjoy learning. I don't enjoy it. So what should I do? He's asking like for a bracha to you. That's what Tzedek said to him. And he said to him, oh, you lucky guy. Like, what should I do? I do enjoy learning. In other words, Tzedek was saying to him, you're actually one up on me. I actually enjoy learning, so I don't have that advantage of okay, I'm sure he did on his level. He can go the 101st time. But he's saying you're in a better space, right? Okay, I mean, the truth is that these things are always very nuanced. There's a very big advantage having he's trying to bring out a point. Today. It doesn't mean that no one should enjoy learning. Because actually, to really be successful in learning, you do have to enjoy learning. It might start from failing the war, but you have to develop some enjoyment in learning, because we have to enjoy Yiddishkeit also. That's just, then we always find something that we can go further in, right? Because the same Tzemach Tzedek, actually, there's another story, an interesting story, that the Alter Rebbe once said to him, I want to give you a bracha in success in learning. That's what I said, it was a great goal. I mean, it was a massively big giant, both in the hidden part of Torah and in the revealed part of Torah. He was, in his time, he was accepted by even non-Hasidim as a very big halachic authority and so on and so on. There's responses from him, he was a tremendous guy. The Al-Tab once said to him, I want to give you a special bracha learning. He said, no, I don't want to, because I want to achieve with my own effort. Then he said later on that he regretted it. He regretted not taking the bracha. Why? Because he said, Torah is infinite. So however much the bracha would have been successful, there'd always be more to do, which would take effort. So I wouldn't lose the advantage of effort, right? Okay, so therefore, I'm sure when Tzemach Tzedek said, I do enjoy learning, he wasn't trying to say that I cannot achieve the idea of effort. Of course he could, right? But it does bring out this very, very strong point of the concept of effort. We have this, right, this idea of effort. You know, it's an amazing thing. Now sometimes we underestimate the value of one time pushing ourselves beyond ourselves. Even if you just do it once, right? Al-Tab says later in Tanya, one time. Each time we do it, it's an amazing thing. So there's a thing I just learned recently in Torah Or and now from Al Rebbe. You know, every day in davening we talk about the angels, right? You realize that we talk about the things that the angels do to praise Hashem, and it's the same words that we use when there's a repetition of the Amidah, when we say Kedusha, right? We say Kadosh, 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 right? Yeah? But it's the same words. The Malachim do it, we do it. So there's a whole thing in Kabbalah, how it all works, right? It works like this, that we need the Malachim need us. How does it work? They can't say Kedusha, we are told, until we say Kedusha. And our Kedusha is enhanced by their Kedusha, because their Kedusha is pure, it's holy, it's Malachim. Right? On the other hand, they can't really say Kedusha to Hashem, they can't really praise Hashem until we do. Why? Because it says, because they have to wait until there's an neshama that came down into a nefesh habam, it's an animal soul, and has a struggle, and is disconnected, and doesn't want to serve Hashem. And that neshama, and that person pushes himself or herself to say Kedusha, that is infinitely greater than the Malachim's Kedusha. Malachim's Kedusha have a certain advantage of purity that we don't have. Okay, so then we, right? So that's why we need each other, kind of thing. That's an amazing thing. The Malachim should need our Kedusha. Why? Because they are pure naturally. They don't have the advantage of what we call iskafia, of pushing themselves, of breaking themselves. Right?
I remember earlier in this, the whole agenda is driven by the battle within the person. There are challenges that come from Hashem from outside, though, aren't there?
Both.
So when we, you know, when we first start learning and there's a passion and we love it, but then we struggle to maintain that.
Each day is a struggle.
Is that entirely coming from within us?
No, not always. So we have the struggle within us, and we have sometimes when Hashem gives us a nisayon, a test. We daven that Hashem shouldn't test us, but sometimes He does. And there's different types of tests. So there's tests that can be just by being in an environment, that can be other people, can be... I mean, today we live in a time of great tests. We live in a time where the values of the world are completely upside down and distorted and infiltrating and having a big impact on people. Even people who believe that there are people who are religious and keeping Torah and mitzvahs, and then nevertheless we have to be very careful. The hashkafa, the perspectives and the values are really seeping in and making us think wrong, right? That's one type of test. And there can be other challenges a person has. There can be challenges from pranosa, from health. There can be all kinds of challenges. But we know, even though we daven that Hashem shouldn't test us, but we do know that when He does, the word nisayon can mean test, but the word nisayon also means to lift up. To overcome a test is an amazing thing. To overcome a test means that you are elevated to a whole new level.
And is it the internal battle within us that opens up the opportunities for those? Is there some sort of connection? There must be.
Yeah, it's just tests. I mean, Hashem decides how, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes the greater a person is, the more external tests they have. That's the truth. But
so you're saying it's a linear thing?
No, it's not 100% like that. I mean, I don't know. Hashem sends tests when He wants to. We don't always understand the sequence and how it works. But there is something like that. Sometimes there's always Hashem, when a person has reached a certain level, Hashem wants him to achieve another level. He He tests the person, he presents the person a test, maybe. Right? You see, this is the such an important concept, this such an important understanding, this tiny idea, because it's completely counter common culture. This whole idea. Right? People don't like to do things that are hard for them nowadays. Or they don't understand, or it doesn't fit with them, all this kind of stuff, right? And we know that in Torah, no, that again, it's not to say that there's no value in enjoying something. On the contrary, there is. Because actually, Yiddishkeit, we need both. That's the truth. Why? Because when we, that's why this parak is so important. In other words, we always have to fight a war because there's such value in the war. What's the value in the war? The idea of bittul. In other words, when we do something we don't want to do, that means that we're actually putting ourselves to a side. We're surrendering. And real surrender means when you do something you absolutely don't want to do. And that's hard. And that's boring. And that's difficult. And the more difficult it is, the bigger the surrender. And there's nothing like surrendering to Hashem, right? On the other hand, there's tremendous value in enjoying something and really living it. Why? Because the downside of surrender is that you're not surrendering with the whole of you. You're surrendering, you're doing what you don't want to do, but the truth is you're not all there. Your brain isn't there, your heart isn't there. You've pushed your heart to a side, you've pushed your brain to a side, you said, no, I'm doing it anyway, it's like the heck with you, right? I'm doing it. But you're not, your brain isn't there. So that's why we do have to get to the point where what we've surrendered to do, we do it with joy. And the Rebbe always explains that joy also has two levels. First of all, we learn to surrender with joy, because just knowing that by me surrendering, I'm becoming much more connected to Hashem in itself brings joy, right? And then eventually we become joyous about the thing. It actually becomes us, right? However, what the Alter Rebbe is cautioning here is that when that happens, then that becomes who you are. Now you're missing the surrender part. Now you're going to take the next step and navigate a territory when you don't like doing. You have to keep going high. Find something that you don't want to do. Shift the goalposts of the war. Right?
Yeah.
And later on, Alter Rebbe says that if a person does it even once, every time we break ourselves is eternal. It's like the eternity of a mitzvah, same sort of thing, right? This person should never think like, you know, I'm not breaking myself every day, so then what's the point? Like, I won't do it altogether. It's not true. Let's say I failed today, but then tomorrow I want to do it. So human nature is, you know, if it's not working, I'm not doing it, right? But that's not what Siddhas teaches us, because every time we break ourselves, every time we extend ourselves, every time we surrender, it's an amazing thing. I'll tell you a beautiful word I saw in the Megillah, since we're still in the still month of Adar. So it says about a famous question. It says by Mordechai. Mordechai lo yichrav lo ishtachavet. He didn't bow down and he didn't prostrate himself. Right? That's definitely. The problem is the grammar of that is that he doesn't say he didn't bow down. He said lo yichra. Yichra is in the future. He won't bow down. And he won't go on his face. What does that mean? So there's many, many different answers. So the Sfas Emes, one of the Gerei Rebbe, says, lesson for a person. A person has to know that in the future lo yichra. Even though today I did bow down, but lo yichra tomorrow. I'm not going to bow down tomorrow. Because I'm not going to let failure get in the way of future Avodas Hashem. Every day is a new day. And if I fail for the last 7 days, but today I managed to break myself, I managed to get out of bed, and I managed to daven properly, whatever. Right? It's not discounted. It's not discounted by the fact that the last 7 days I didn't do it. It's today's breaking is today's surrender is an amazing surrender. And it's holds its own ground and it has its own eternity. Obviously you have to try to do it every day, but I'm saying that each surrender is an amazing thing. Alter Rebbe says later, very, very strongly about it. He says, he talks about pushing away negative thoughts and pushing away toxic ideas, unholy thoughts, and things like that. He says you ought to push them out of our psyche. And he says, V'chol d'chiyo d'chiyo. With every pushing away, every one time you push it away, it's an amazing thing. Which brings an amazing simcha, right? By the way, even the malachim themselves, we find, if you go on the davening, you'll see there's two types of malachim. I don't know if you realize. There's malachim that say kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. There's malachim that say baruch kvod Hashem im koyim, right? Okay, so that's, we have to go into that, what it means. We have to explore. But I will tell you this. If you look about how the malachim are doing it, there's actually two types of angels. The first one are the srafim, the very, very high angels. Mm-hmm. Over there those malachim you'll see are very quiet. Yes, the first ones, they accept upon themselves the yoke of heavenly kingship with love, and they grant permission to each other to sanctify their maker with joyous spirit, pure speech, sacred melody, unison, and all of this, like very calm and very beautiful, right? Okay, that's the first thing. And what do they say? They say, holy, 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 they understand the holiness of Hashem, they get it, they understand it, right? Then you have the ofanim. The Ofanim and the Chayot HaKodesh, the different types of angels, they lower. And it says they do it Barash Godel. They kind of all of a sudden make a lot of noise, right? And they rise towards the Shafim. Now they lower. They actually don't get it so much. They don't grasp the holiness of Hashem as much as the higher angels, right? And they say Baruch Kvod Hashem, Mekom Blessed Glory of Hashem from its place. And Kabbalah and Chassidus explains, actually, they actually reach higher than the Shafim. They actually go to the very source, the very origin of the essence of Hashem. What does that mean? Because they, within the world of Malachim even, they're the ones that have to make noise. What's noise? Noise represents a resistance. Right? Noise always resistance. For example, if you take a wick that's saturated with oil and you light it will make no noise whatsoever. It'll just burn beautifully and peacefully. Right? On Motzei Shabbos, when you make Havdalah, you put your Havdalah candle in the wine, and now it's got some non-flammable stuff there. And someone else comes, I don't know if you've ever seen this, someone else comes, wants to make Havdalah, and relights the Havdalah candle, it crackles. Why? Because it has water there now, wine, whatever. So it's fighting. There's a resistance there. Noises means when you're struggling, right? So the Srafim are the Malachim of absolute purity, the no calmness, right? Like when Hashem gave the Torah, the world went silent, it says. Why? Because Hashem was so revealed, there was no resistance whatsoever. The world just became completely quiet, except for Hashem's voice. Right? So it says, the bird didn't chirp, the lions didn't roar. The world went completely silent at Matan Torah. Why? Why silence? Why is that so important? Because there was no resistance whatsoever. The world just fell into place. Purim, on the other hand, going back to Purim, is the festival of noise. We make a lot of noise, Bahama, right? Why? Because Purim was darkness. Purim was there's plenty of resistance. Hashem is hidden, can't find it. Right? So therefore, Purim is a noisy yantif. Because you have to struggle to serve Hashem. That's why it's the greatest yantif. That's why we have to, that's why by Purim we it's higher than Matan Torah. In other words, because that's what the Gemara says. At Matan Torah there was no resistance, so it was almost like it was forced. Like they didn't have a choice, because Hashem was obvious. Purim, they had to discover Hashem, so they re-accepted the Torah in a much deeper way. Right? I'm saying, just brings out, I mean, there's so many, we can go for hours on this, but this brings out this concept, the beauty of actually surrendering, the beauty of doing something we don't want to do. And that's really, being a chassid, learning chassidus, that's really what it's about, avoid it. It's about always taking the next thing that we don't want, that's hard for us to do, and doing. Trying to improve, trying to. Not an easy thing, we don't always succeed, but.
That's why we've ever hated empathy so much.
Ooh.
But that's related to this, right?
Of course. Because yeah. Growth is struggle.
And despair.
Both things. In other words, you squeeze and do, yeah, but all of this. But also, apathy was terrible. In other words, complacency was the worst thing because then you've reached 100 times. In your little world, you've reached that 100 times, mm-hmm. whatever your 100 is. And you're not doing the 101, so you're missing Aveda. The whole thing is Aveda Hashem. The 100 is good, and what you enjoy, it's good. But you always got to go to the 101. This was, by the way, this was like, by the Rebbe, this was like extreme. People come to the Rebbe sometimes, you know, and think they were going to get a real pat on the back, like, Rebbe, you know, last Sunday we had an event and I put on a tefillin with 100 people, and it's amazing. Rebbe said, that's great, next Sunday 110 people, 200 people. You know, like, no room to, yeah. But it's also appreciating, see, something, like, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't mean, I think people make this mistake, I think it's like harsh, and it's like, you know, it means you gotta be, no, there's a simcha in doing this. There's a simcha in knowing that when I break myself, I'm coming close to Hashem. It's an amazing thing. It's like I'm experiencing bittul. It's hard.
It's all the same for you. Like, in those letters, it's like, you can feel that you're saying it to help the person.
Yeah, it was very different. It was about that your neshama is infinite. Yep. You can take the next step. Yeah, very different. Okay.